kwangu na uhuru na utukufu hata milele.
Broadcasting from high above the reserve, this is Radio Harambe. Thank you once again for tuning in to Radio Harambe, brought to you by JomboEveryone.com. I am Dave McBride, broadcasting from the Radio Harambe studios, and joining me from somewhere in the world, a man who would be willing to chain himself to a chair at Sana'a if they were ever to take away the bread service, it's Safari Mike. Mike, how are you today?
Jumbo Dave, I am in Mount Manangouba. You know where that is?
Mount Manangouba.
Yeah.
Mount Manangouba. That is a absolutely fantastic name.
It is, right?
Manangouba sounds almost Himalayan or something like that, but I'm sure I'm wrong.
You are wrong.
I have no idea.
I am in Cameroon.
Oh, yeah, I guess it is African sounding, isn't it? Yeah, okay.
Yes, it is. I am studying here the horror frog, which is a very, very unusual animal. It is also known as the hairy frog because it has kind of bristles on its sides, on its thighs, that help, sort of absorb oxygen from the water. It almost acts like a gill. But it is also called the horror frog because when in defense, it will actually break its bones from its toes, and the bones will come out of the skin and it'll act as almost like a wolverine's claws. So I am here studying the horror frog.
What an amazing creature.
It's pretty darn cool.
Is this endangered?
It is not at all. It is of least concern. The habitat destruction has cut down some of its range, but it is not considered endangered.
Wow. I got to see one of these. I wrote it down, though. In this show, we are going to discuss the news from the animal kingdom and Walt Disney World, and then in our feature segment, we're going to be heading over to Asia to discuss the Yak and Yeti. But Mike, before we get to that, I just want to mention one thing to discuss our latest attempt to raise funds for our conservation partners. Our very own fellow writer for JomboEveryone.com, Brooke, has made and is selling some really cool, really gorgeous-looking zebra-inspired, safari-inspired bracelets. She makes them herself, if I'm not mistaken, and she will be donating, I believe, all of the proceeds to our conservation partners. Mike, you can speak better to me on the specifics of those.
You are correct. So she makes them herself. They're handmade. And as you said, all the proceeds will go to our conservation partners. And actually, you will get to pick which of the five. We've already sent some money to the Grevies and to the Cheetahs. So, pick one of the five that we work with, and it'll go.
Very cool. If you go to our blog, you can do it two ways. You can go to the blog and go into Buana Blog, and that's B-W-A-N-A, Buana Blog at blogspot.com, or simply go to JomboEveryone.com, click the blog link, and you'll see, once you get through the blog, on the very top right of the sidebar, you'll see a photo of a bracelet. You click that, you'll go to a page that has all the information you'll ever need for it. You also can contact us directly. You can either email me or us. You can email the show, and we'll forward the information along. Do that by emailing jomboeveryone@gmail.com. Or you can also, I believe, direct message Brooke Wright on Twitter. You can find her at Brookie, Brookie, 1248. Did I get that right?
I think so.
Okay. She'll answer any questions you have. Payments are PayPal only. I believe they're $18.
Right.
And that includes shipping in the continental U.S. If you're outside of the continental U.S., you're going to have to make some kind of arrangement there for the shipping, because it can be expensive depending on where you are. So just wanted to mention that. Our latest attempt to try and raise some more funds on behalf of the listeners and readers of Radio Harambe and JomboEveryone.com. So, Mike, get right into the news, and there really is one place to start. While the rest of the world was obsessing over videos of the Snow White roller coaster, which I believe we're going to be getting to later.
Yes, we are.
Just the past few days, annual pass holders have received emails regarding a new special event coming to the Animal Kingdom this summer. The email read like this: annual pass holders, mark your calendar for Saturday nights this summer, where you can enjoy an all-new, never-before-seen immersive experience. Look for more details soon. And then it said, because the grandest tales and tastes of Africa are to come alive like never before. Then you had a video linked on this email, which sent you to this very sort of like pointless sun going down cartoon kind of thing. It was actually a pretty little thing, but it offered you no more information than that first email mm-hmm. you got. We all kind of sat around wondering what this could be. There were reports flying out all over the place. I did everything I possibly could to try to confirm this. I was contacting people all over the place, had other people contacting people. And while I was in the process of doing this morning, I just was flipping through the events page on Disney's actual website for Disney World and found that within the course of the last hour or so, they had posted all of the information.
Yep.
The event is called Harambe Nights, and here is exactly how Disney describes it. Voyage into Harambe Village for a roaring summer celebration featuring the grandest tales and tastes of Africa. Every Saturday from June 7th to August 9th, 2014, pay tribute to the 20th anniversary of Disney's The Lion King at an all-inclusive extravaganza inside Disney's Animal Kingdom theme park. The excitement kicks off with a warm welcome reception before moving into Harambe Theater for a private performance of the all-new show The Lion King Concert in the Wild, complete with a special celebrity narrator and a live orchestra.
Mm-hmm.
Then, once the show comes to a close, you're invited to hit the streets for an exotic party where you can explore all sorts of sizzling seasonal fare, magical merchandise offerings, and a series of character appearances and artist signings. Be sure to stick around as the night draws to a conclusion, too, and receive a fond farewell you won't soon forget. There are two pricing tiers. I'm going to mention those now. I'm sure that's going to become a big part of the conversation. Premium being $134 plus tax for adults and $94 for ages 3 to 9. Regular seating, which I guess premium seating means you're going to sit closer. Regular seating will be $119. Only a difference is $16.
It's pretty close.
Yeah, plus tax for adults and $79 for ages 3 to 9. Now, Mike, some of the other rumors I've heard, there's a lot of details that aren't put out in the official Disney thing. That's always the case. There's a lot of details not on the official Disney website for stuff that's been happening for years. The show will be, it looks like the show's going to be about an hour long. Like we said, it's not going to be the standard festival show. This is a special show. We discussed that there will be exclusive merchandise on sale through all that. They mentioned that in there. And the other thing I'm hearing is that the fond farewell is going to be something along the lines of the kiss goodnight from the Magic Kingdom. However, with a little bit more involvement into this party, it will take place apparently around the Tree of Life. So I guess everybody will move over to the Tree of Life, where there'll be a dessert portion and maybe even like cordials and that kind of thing. And then I guess there's going to be some sort of, you know, kiss goodnight kind of presentation. I'll start, Mike, with what I think about this.
Okay.
If the price is correct, you can guarantee, and it is, we know that this is the price. You can guarantee that short of having elephants sitting at my table with me, I probably wouldn't be willing to pay that much. At least not more than once. But that's mostly because I'm cheap. Not because I don't think it represents a value.
That really depends.
It looks like, from without knowing some of the details of how they're going to police some of these things, it looks like it could be something of a pretty decent value for the money when you consider if it's the only time you're ever going to see this show. It's the only way to actually see this particular show. If the show is actually an hour long and not a 30-minute thing, and unless Disney has a very different version of the word all-inclusive, That means the drinks are included as well. So between food, drinks, and show and everything on offer, it's pricey, but it's hard at this point to determine whether or not it's not a good value. But let me just add this one last thing before I let you go off on it. All I'm doing now is praying, hoping that all of the things we've heard about new nighttime greatness coming to the Animal Kingdom, that this isn't the best of what they have. That I hope that this is just the beginning of a series of nighttime improvements. We know the nighttime safari is coming, but we saw a lot of pictures of bands playing and things like that. I hope that those pictures aren't this. I hope that those things are something that everybody's going to have a chance to partake in the future. So, Mike, your thoughts.
First of all, you know, the first thing that popped in my head had nothing to do with this, but it's that obviously the Festival of the Lion King is going to be open by, like, Memorial Day weekend. Right. Because obviously it's going to be all ready by the first couple of days of June. It starts June 7th, right?
Correct.
Secondly was the price. It seemed like at first glance was like, wow, that's a lot of money for a couple of hours in the park. But then, you know, it's more than what you pay for a, you know, significantly more than what you pay for, like, let's say the Mickey's Not So Scary Halloween Party.
Right.
Which is several hours in the park and has a whole, I mean, you have the whole park. It's all sorts of new, different entertainment. But this at, you know, significantly more, didn't seem like such a value. But then you get to the, you know, food and drinks are included. Now, what does that mean? Does that mean you could drink as much as you want? I can't believe that. I can't believe that you're allowed to, you know, that it's as much alcohol as you can consume in a 3-hour period is included in the price.
Well, what else could it be?
Well, there's going to have to be some sort of limit to it, don't you think?
I guess there's going to have to be. I don't know what that would be, though. I don't know how you would police that.
Yeah, what,
are you
going to
give somebody a bracelet or a card or something that says get three? I mean, then it's not all-inclusive. That's the thing. When you say all-inclusive, the whole world knows what that means, right, Mike? Everybody understands that, with, you know, especially in the travel business, you know?
That's true. I guess. I mean, they are charging a lot of money, so I guess it could be all-inclusive in terms of as much alcohol as you could drink in a 3-hour period. Because it is 3 hours, right?
It is 3.5 hours, from what I understand. 7 to 10:30.
You could drink a lot of alcohol in 3.5 hours.
Well, for an hour of it, you're going to be in the show.
That's
true.
They
may not offer alcohol at the beginning of it.
Right.
May only limit it to the end.
Right. That's true.
From what I'm understanding is, I believe the time frame is going to be, you know, 7 o'clock. The show is going to start, I think, around 7:30 or maybe even 8 o'clock.
Mm-hmm.
And then the show runs for an hour. And then there's like an hour post show where we do like some kind of thing. And then in the last 15 minutes, everybody does this kiss goodnight thing.
Right.
Something along those lines. I may have that wrong. Those are, that kind of stuff's kind of trickling out now. So we don't really know for sure. But
now, in terms of this affecting the nighttime aspects of the park and all that kind of stuff, I mean, I don't think this is what they're going to be doing, you know. I mean, sooner or later, they're going to have the nighttime show,
right,
which means the park's going to be open late. I think this is just sort of their way to sort of put their foot in the water and test it out. We've been seeing the park opening a little bit later, 8 o'clock at night, even when it's not the busiest times of the year. I think they're just sort of, you know, testing the waters here, and this is another way to do it. And this is also obviously another way to make a boatload of money. They hope this will take off, and it's Lion King's 20th anniversary and all that kind of stuff. So, that's what my thoughts on it.
The other thing about it, Mike, that kind of puzzles me, it's an all-inclusive drink thing with children, mm-hmm, where kids can come to it. That's weird.
Well, I mean, let's be honest. I mean,
do you really want an all-inclusive where we're saying, hey, get in as many beers as you can in the next hour and a half with a bunch of kids running around taking pictures with Mickey Mouse? That just seems like a recipe for disaster, is all I'm saying.
I guess we're going to try it out and see what happens. I guess that's the idea.
Now, the other cool thing about it is that there's going to be celebrity narrators besides the live orchestra, and they already scheduled those celebrity narrators.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Mike, you're going to have to help me here, and I know I'm...
Don't ask me.
You don't know who they are either?
Not all of them.
I don't know who any of them are. I'll tell you right now, I don't know who they are. Viola Davis could be Viola, unless it's like the old pitcher for the Mets.
Wait, you don't even know who David Alan Grier is?
That I know. He's the one I know.
Alfre Woodard? An actress?
No. What is she in?
You would recognize her if you...
Montego Glover? Michael Beach? Harry Lennox? Joe Morton? Ryan Stokes Mitchell and Patina Miller.
Joe Morton, didn't he used to play second base for the Cincinnati Reds?
Yeah, I believe he did, right? So I don't know who they are. So they may mean something to somebody. They don't mean anything to me, but that's, what do I know? The other thing about it is that the event really only runs 10 times.
Nine, actually.
Nine or 10 times. So it's very... extremely limited.
Yes, very. It's only one night a week for those 9 weekends.
It's puzzling. I mean, it's like I said, it's something with great potential. Unlike other hard ticket events, they seem to be putting a lot of creativity into this. I mean, if they're really creating a brand new hour-long show that they're only going to show here, I have a hard time believing this is the only time you're ever going to see this show.
But how different is it going to be from the real festival liking? That's another issue.
Yeah, we got to see this. It's going to be very interesting, and it's going to be hard to find somebody who gets to go since there's only going to be a handful of people.
Yeah.
So, any other thoughts on it, Mike, before we get going? I mean, I think...
Not really. We'll learn some more information, but not too many more thoughts now.
It's another kind of... One of these things, it just springs on you.
Yeah, it came out of nowhere.
Literally came out of nowhere.
Yeah.
I mean, all of a sudden I started hearing these rumors and these things and seeing it. And at first I'm like, oh, wow, this is going to be great. I thought it was going to be something like the Animal Kingdom version of, you know, Mickey's Not So Scary or something like that. Like a huge Africa celebration, park-wide or at least Harambe-wide Africa celebration. Where they'll do a couple of different shows and some, you know, and then it turns into $135. I'm like, what? You know, and then you see what it really is, and the possibility of doing an all-inclusive is, I mean, I don't remember that ever being the case in one of these kind of things, and so incredibly limited. And then to know that there are these celebrities, I guess, doing it, is fascinating to me. It really is. I mean, I'm impressed by at least the work being put into it. I don't know how big a hit it's going to be. It's clearly meant to move crowds out of the Magic Kingdom on Saturdays in the middle of the biggest, busiest season of the year. Hopefully it'll do that, but I tend to worry whether or not it really will.
Yeah, but the thing is, I mean, how many people can it move? You can only have...
Right.
I'm assuming there's going to be one show of this Lion King, because I don't know that for a fact.
No, it does seem that way.
But it does, I mean, just based upon the timing, that it would have to be probably only one show. So you can only actually have however many people fill up the theater. Right, as the, you know, sort of the limit of the number of tickets. So however many people that is how many people are going to be limited to the show, to the event. So,
well, we will see. We'll keep you posted on it. A lot of people, especially cast members, don't know any more than what's on this thing. And a lot of them don't even know this yet.
So, no, I know. I've reached out to a few of them and they don't know much more.
I pointed this out to most of them today. You know, they didn't even know. So this has really been under wraps and all of a sudden exploded on things. And you could buy tickets and they haven't really done any kind of announcement fanfare for it yet. You know, so we'll see. Maybe there will be a push, kind of more of a PR push for it in the time to come, and will help us to learn a little bit more about it. Let us move on, Mike, to a subject near and dear to your heart, Sanaa.
Okay.
I believe we have some menu changes, and does this mean you're going to be chaining yourself to the floor there, or no?
No, not at all. I mean, it looks... You know, a lot of these restaurants tend to tweak their menus every once in a while, and that's really all this is. You know, they got rid of the Durban chicken on their slow cooked and gravy portion of the menu and replaced it with a different chicken dish. They have new crab cakes. They've gotten, you know, they swapped out a few of the desserts. The only thing I noticed, and the one thing that stuck out to me, was in looking at the new menu online, it did not reference the fact that the bread service, for an extra $2, you can get all 9 dips as opposed to the 3 that it comes with, which would be a big change. I don't know. I'll have to see if that actually is true or not. I have not heard anybody who was there today. But if that is true, that would be a little disappointing. But other than that, it's not really that big of a deal. Check the menu. There are some, you know, some of the desserts. If you are a big fan of, like, the coconut cheesecake, well, sorry about that. It's now banana cheesecake. You know, rice pudding is now tapioca pudding. You know, that kind of stuff.
Right, right.
But the big deals, the bread service, the tomato soup, the, you know, some of the entrees, like the butter chicken and all that kind of stuff, they're all still there. There's no major difference.
You know, I think we've gotten to the point now with this restaurant that it has so many, it gets such good press now, and it has so many faithful followers that some of those big things, they're just going to be there forever. I mean,
I would think that they're never going to really change it to any great shakes. But, you know, I'm going there in a couple months, eat again, and see what see if I like it, and, you know, see if I like some of the new stuff, and then off we go.
Also, coming this Tuesday, May 6th. Disney's Animal Kingdom will be celebrating International Migratory Bird Day. We always mention these little events as they come out throughout the year. They're really kind of cool. Disney Parks blog describes it like this. Kids can get banded, which they put in quotes, which scientists do to gather data for bird conservation, becoming honorary birds for the day. I've been called that a few times. And discover how their feather color, their clothing, their wingspan, their arm length and height compares with various bird species. I don't know if I'd want to know that. Families can play a diet matching game and learn about the different and many different foods that our birds eat here at Animal Kingdom. And even get a chance to see birds examined by our veterinarians at the animal hospital. Mike, most of these things take place out on Rafiki's Planet Watch.
Mm-hmm.
They're very low key. If you happen to be there on the day they happen, it's really kind of cool to see something different out there and to gauge the cast members on some of these species. But we always like to mention these things as they come in.
Yeah, I mean, there's really not much to add other than if this is the week you're down in Disney, that might be the good day to go to the Animal Kingdom and, you know, check that kind of stuff out. Obviously, you know, I've said this before, nobody's going to plan their vacation around it, but it's good to know in case you want to give it a shot.
Now, Mike, I got 2 more stories, and both of these stories were put into the hopper to be read before the Harambe Nights information broke. So I think both of these things are influenced by that story. But okay. I'm gonna let them go anyway and put them out there. For one thing, late last week, we got word of a special cast member-only event being held at the new Festival of the Lion King Theater on May 8th, which is this coming Thursday by the time you listen to this. We don't know the nature of the event. I'm not even sure cast members know of it yet. Usually at these events, they do some sort of performance. They view some sort of thing. And then there's usually a discussion by the suits that, you know, kind of brief everybody on what's to come. We don't know if that's what's going to happen. We just assume. What we do know for sure is that what we had Mike mentioned briefly before is that it means the new theater is way beyond what I would term the hard hat stage of construction, the stage when it's not safe enough to have people walking around, and it's now into the fit and finish type work. It could even be, you know, completed by May 8th. So that means, if nothing else, we know it's got to open by that June number, that June 7th date, but it may open even a matter of a couple of weeks before that. So we could be talking mid-May now at this point.
Yeah, I mean, I would assume that maybe by Memorial Day weekend, which is, you know, obviously towards the end of May, it should be open, I would think. But I'm sure we'll know a lot more about the theater and what's going on in there after this event, because as we all know, cast members aren't always the best secret keepers.
No. Now, the internet will be filled with pictures from inside the theater and around it and everything else.
I mean, I've already heard some things that that there's going to be new floats and that the show itself will not be exactly the same as before, but it'll be pretty similar. You know, I've already heard some of that kind of stuff, and, you know, we'll probably get a better sense of what that is. I mean, cast members have told me, like, you know, where the bathrooms are located in the theater, all that kind of stuff. Right. So flags that are appearing on top of the theater and all that kind of stuff. So we're really going to know come 8th.
And finally, this is perhaps the least informational story I've ever said on the Radio Harambe podcast's local news section. You see, here's what we know. We know that there's going to be brand new merchandise associated with the Festival of the Lion King, or at least Lion King merchandise.
Right.
That is going to be released in the near future. We don't know whether or not it's this exclusive merchandise tied into this Harambe night. I don't believe it is. It may be. We don't know. Mike and I have both kind of seen some of it, but we can't. But for reasons beyond our control, we don't want to give any more information than that. But we just wanted to let you know, because it's a bit of information that we've been reporting kind of in the rumor mill for a long time, where we've been talking about the potential of merchandise specific to the Festival of the Lion King finally coming as part of this as well.
And Disney has essentially announced that this new show, this new event will have event-specific merchandise that you can only buy at the event.
Right.
I'm sure there'll be... I mean, we know there's going to be Lion King specific, you know, merchandise coming, you know, including, you know, mugs and whatever, that kind of stuff. I won't get too involved in it, but I've seen it. It looks pretty cool, to be honest.
Yeah.
Be on the lookout for it. It looks pretty good.
As we learn more, we will let you know, but we just wanted to pass it along that be prepared. If you are like me, a Festival of the Lion King fan, certainly a Lion King fan, which I am as well, you're going to have some cool stuff coming.
Did you intend that pun?
What do you mean?
You said be prepared, and then you talked about Lion King stuff.
I didn't.
That was pretty good then.
In fact, I didn't even know it until you said it.
That was pretty impressive.
That's it for the local news. We're going to take a short break. Be back with the world news in just a second on Radio Harambe.
I'm Explorer Mickey, and like most kids, I love zebras. And some of the coolest are the Grevy Zebra. But if things don't change soon, there won't be any left in the wild. The Grevy Zebra Trust is doing everything they can to help keep them from extinction. But there are only a couple of thousand left, so we have to work fast. Go to their website, GrevyZebraTrust.org, and donate anything you can. Even a small donation will help keep the Grevy Zebra alive for us kids and the future generations to enjoy.
Welcome back to Radio Harambe. It is time, as always, for the world news. And with that, as always, Safari Mike. Mike, what is new in the Disney world this week?
Well, Dave, we're going to soar over the world and we're going to go deep into the mines. But first, let's go to Epcot and let's talk about Tom Fitzgerald. He is apparently taking over a new direction going for Epcot as sort of the lead Imagineer of the park. Now, you hear, Disney has not officially announced this, but what you're hearing is that Disney wants to take Epcot back to its roots and, you know, go back to the old days of Future World and World Showcase and all that kind of stuff, which to me really means Future World. World Showcase has essentially remained the same as it always has, but Future World could use a little help, and Tom Fitzgerald is apparently going to man that. They wouldn't really announce this kind of deal if all he was going to do was, you know, really nothing, which is essentially what's been going on at Epcot for the last 10 years or so, just a tweak here, a tweak there. You know, you get the sense that they're really going to invest some money, particularly in Future World. For people who don't know, Tom Fitzgerald has been in Imagineering forever. He was involved with Star Tours. He was involved with the original Star Tours in Disneyland, and he's been at Disneyland Paris for quite some time. And he's going to move over from Paris once the Ratatouille ride is up and running later this summer, and then, you know, go into the Epcot project.
It's exciting. Tom Fitzgerald is one of the guys who I would say is some of the transitional. I would call him somebody who dates back to the post Walt era and is some of those transitional people that have, and one of the guys who has stuck around
for a long time
through thick and thin and has some great things on his resume.
Some Star Tours.
Yep.
Right. But some of the other things, you know, he gets some flack for.
Yep.
He's been involved with Honey, I Shrunk the Audience.
Exactly. I was just going to say that one.
Ellen's Energy Adventure, which I kind of like, but gets a lot of flack. But the real doozy
that's, is. That's terrible.
The real doozy is like the Toy Story Playland out in Paris, which is basically a Toy Story version of the Dinorama in, although even bigger scale, a lot of carny rides just themed towards Toy Story. So you get a lot of, you know, on social media, not the most popular choice in the world to take over a new direction for Epcot. But, you know, it remains to be seen. I mean, he did do Star Tours, which, you know, in Disneyland, the original. So, you know, he was involved in that pretty heavily. So, you know, we'll see. At least you get the sense that Disney senses that Future World needs to go back to its roots a little bit more. And so there's at least that.
That's exactly what I was going to say. If nothing else, regardless of who the person is, it is a high-ranking Imagineer who has been given the brief to, you know, to fix what's considered, I guess, an issue, and it has to be considered an issue at this point. And so I think that's at least positive. Now, none of this matters unless there's a big boatload of money coming with him.
Right.
So we that all remains to be seen.
And this blends right into my next story, if you want me to go to that.
Sure, of course.
Well, as was reported by, I guess it was WW Magic or maybe some other sites first, cast members were told to look out for filming. And indeed, the helicopters were spotted filming over both Magic Kingdom and Epcot, and it is widely believed that this is a project where you were going to get a new Soarin' film. So that kind of blends into Tom Fitzgerald taking over Epcot. And, you know, Soarin' is a hugely popular attraction, as we all know, but everybody talks about how the film quality of it. And why are we soaring over California in Epcot Center in Florida? So what apparently is happening is the new park out in Shanghai is going to get a Soarin' over the world. And the other parks will be getting the same digital film as the one in Shanghai, with the only difference being the last part of the film will be filmed over the park you're in. So, you know, out in California, the last scene, you'll be flying over the California parks here, you know, Epcot and Magic Kingdom. Although how that works in Shanghai when they haven't even opened that park yet is beyond me, but, you know, I will leave that for other people to sort. So apparently we're getting a new Soarin' film, so that's good.
Well, the first thing I don't understand, Mike, and I'm really asking this isn't a snarky question, is this isn't all based on somebody. This rumor doesn't revolve around somebody seeing a helicopter flying over and assuming that they're filming, is it? I mean, how could somebody sitting in a park below know that the helicopter is filming? And that's, how could they possibly know that they're filming for a Soarin' movie?
The filming for Soarin' was a rumor before they actually saw the helicopters. Cast members were told, you know, that this was going to be flying over, you know, certain times. And if you actually look at the films of the helicopter itself, you can see a huge camera strapped to the bottom of it. So they were clearly filming. There's no question about that.
Yeah, but they could be filming for a commercial.
Right, or some sort of travel show or,
right. You
know, the next Stacey Must-Do's or something like that. That is true. But there's a strong rumor that this is a new Soarin' film. And they have already pretty much said that there's going to be a Soarin' attraction in Shanghai, and that's not going to be California. So if they're going to film a Soarin' over the world for Shanghai, why not bring it to the other parks? I mean, you're not spending any extra money to do it.
Here's what I'd say to this.
Okay.
I have long ago learned that new doesn't always mean better at Epcot. So be careful what you wish for, kids. If Soarin' is a popular and very good ride right now, who knows what it'll be when they're done with it. That's all I want to say.
Right, it's a good ride, but the film quality is terrible. I mean, you go in there and you see dirt all over the film. It's really getting bad. But the Disney World version, they really need to make it digital.
Right, but they don't need to shoot a new one to do that.
But apparently, they're shooting a new one anyway.
And that's what I'm saying.
Right.
You don't know what you're going to get. So it's the only way I'm going to put it. Go ahead. Keep going.
All right. I guess we'll see. Yep. Let's go over to, this is true for all American Disney parks. Apparently, starting in the very end of April, a couple days before we recorded this, that all Frozen merchandise, you now have a limit as to what you can actually buy. And I've never heard of this before in a Disney park. You can't buy more than 5 of one item of Frozen. So you can get 5 Anna dolls, you can get 5 Elsa dolls, but if you want to buy a 6th Anna doll, you're just not going to be allowed to. They're having such a run on Frozen merchandise that they're actually limiting the amount of stuff that you can buy. And, you know, I've heard, you know, Keith and Jamie, our friends, the hipsters, who just went to Disney, were at, you know, basically were rope dropping a store. They were telling me the story just the other day when we were having dinner. And they said, they wanted to buy this doll. They were eyeing it up. And Jamie put it down and they were going to go pick it up later on the way home, you know, on the way out. And the cast member came over and said, that won't be here in a couple of hours. So if you want it, you got to get it now. I mean, it is crazy how popular this Frozen stuff is. And I'm not even talking about, you know, the 5-hour waits to meet Anna and Elsa, which is beyond reason to me. I can't fathom seeing a sign that says 320-minute wait and to meet and greet characters and getting in that line. I just can't. But this is...
Well, you're talking to the wrong guy when it comes to meet and greets, so...
I know, it's just pandemonium here. It's pandemonium, the Anna and Elsa stuff.
Mike, the thing...
It's been going on for a while, too, now. But go ahead.
The thing I'm curious about is it doesn't make any sense why Disney would put a limit on it. Unless, are these things popping up on eBay and things like that? Are people reselling them? Is that, like, a thing?
I'm sure it is. I'm sure it is. Because they're hard to get. I mean, they're really, really hard to get. I know... You know, looking for like an Olaf doll for somebody's birthday and stuff recently it's impossible to find. They're not making them fast enough.
Wow, that's incredible. I don't remember them doing that with a non-limited edition item. That's really something else.
Never. I've never heard of this before. I mean, to tell somebody you can't buy 6 of those items, you can only buy 5. I mean, who, I have never heard of that from a Disney park.
I guess it's a good movie, huh?
It's a pretty good movie. I mean, to be honest, I mean, I'm not going to get involved into reviewing it here, but I enjoyed it. It's not my favorite Disney movie. It's not even my favorite recent Disney movie. I prefer Wreck-It Ralph, but it's a good movie. I mean, it's good. It's, you know, it's a very well done. It's beautiful to look at. There are some issues with it, like the villain is stupid and there's come out some other stuff, but I mean, it's not the perfect film. But it's a good film. It's enjoyable. And girls, you know, in the age range of, for example, my daughter, absolutely go gaga. They love it. I mean, if you ask Megan what her favorite Disney movie is, she'll tell you Frozen.
Wow. Okay. Well, that explains the rush on the merchandise. They better get this up. They better fix this before Christmas. they got 6 better. Months to figure this out.
Yeah, they better. They better.
Do we have more stories?
Got 2 more. Real quick, today is actually May 1st, and for the we're recording this, and today was the first day that people other than park employees got to ride Snow White's Mine Coaster, which means YouTube is inundated with point of view ride throughs of the attraction.
Yeah, I watched one today.
Yeah, so did I. And it looked just like the ride-throughs that Disney was showing, yeah. You know, months before. Mm-hmm. I will say this, and I don't know how you feel about it. I liked it. Did I love it? No, but it's a good attraction. It seems like a fun ride. It is not the greatest thing since sliced bread, but which Disney has been saying for like the last 2 years. So this is going to, they've been pumping this ride, and just it's overhyped. And just like I was afraid of, it is not the greatest ride ever made. But it's a fun ride. It's a good ride. And if it was just built on its own merits, people would be, all right, this is a fun ride. I enjoy this. But we shall see, if it really stands the test of time in terms of super popular. It's obviously going to be super popular to start off with, but we will see.
It looks to me like a good Disney ride.
Yeah.
But the first thing that popped into my head from watching it, everybody, the comparison people are making is to Splash Mountain, right? Because Splash Mountain has, it's a combining, it is the perfect sort of metaphor for combining theme park thrills with Disney's sort of touch, right? Mm-hmm. But the difference being that the elements of Splash Mountain, the animatronic elements, are much longer and much more involved. The first thing that popped into my mind with this was that's a little short. For what they're trying to say is like a Disney storytelling, animatronic based attraction.
It's a fun little roller coaster for about a minute. Mm-hmm. Then you're in the mines and you see the dwarves, and it's really good. Well done, no doubt. But that's about 30 seconds.
Yeah.
Maybe as much as another minute. But again, the animatronics are great. There's no storytelling, though. I mean, you're just seeing the dwarves.
Just seeing dwarves, right.
Yeah, going through the mines, singing their song. And then it's another 30 seconds of some fun roller coaster stuff outside. Within that, it looked like that dip after the mine was nice. I mean, it was like a good, it was a good thrill there. But, whatever. I mean, it's like I said, it's a nice ride.
It's the thing that I felt, and I know that they're limited because they're trying to make it a family coaster, which limits their ability to do anything kind of, thrilling for sure.
Right.
But the thing that stuck out for me, Mike, when I watched it is, like, how do I put this? There was nothing to me that made it stand out. There was no, like Space Mountain's in the dark. Expedition Everest has an incredibly large Yeti and a big drop. There's an incredible story element to the Tower of Terror, and we can go on and on about these things. There's something. There's that little bit of something in a lot of these e-ticket rides that makes you say, "Wow, that you never forget that." This one, there didn't seem to be any of that. It was kind of a tame coaster and a few animatronics, and while they were nice, there was just nothing there that made me think to myself, it reminds me of the new Ariel thing, the new Ariel dark ride.
Right, right.
You rode it and you're like, it's another dark ride. There's nothing in this dark ride that makes me say, wow, I'll never forget that. That's the greatest thing I've ever seen, or what a cool element.
Right.
There's no, like, even Nemo at Epcot, the projection technology was something different. There's nothing here. There's no unique element to this, and at least not in my mind.
No, I mean, the animatronics are, more advanced, but no more advanced than what we've, some of the high quality ones like Jack Sparrow or whatever.
And you go by too fast to really notice them that much.
Well, I mean, no, you slow down for the
For a couple of them.
For the mine scene. I mean, that's fine.
Yeah.
I mean, it's fine.
It's fine. It's fine. It's good. It looks good. I don't want to make it sound like I don't think it looks good. It looks good.
No, it's a good ride.
It's not Expedition Everest Part 2.
No, it's not something you need to be pumping for like the last 2 years. I mean, exactly. God forbid when they start actually building like Star Wars Land and they're going to build like some major rides. I mean, they're going to really overhype those if this is any of it.
Yeah. And it's dedicated, I think, tomorrow, right? They have the official ceremony?
Yeah, and they're officially going to announce when it is actually going to open. They have been letting people ride it, obviously, the people who are invited, press, and things like that.
Right.
Not
us.
They're going to basically go back to, there's some stuff they got to work out. Like, there's a scene with the witch at the end or whatever. So there's still some work to be done, and apparently it's not even going to be in soft openings once you know, once this rolls around. I expect, and what I've heard, is that the official opening date will be like towards the end of May, and you'll get some legit soft openings, you know, in a couple weeks.
Cool.
Okay. But we'll see.
Cool. We got one more, you said?
One more. I referenced, you know, Star Wars and building a legit Star Wars rides. Well, apparently we're getting closer and closer to actually that happening. Scott Trowbridge, which is how I believe you pronounce his name, has been put in charge of Star Wars Studios, which is basically a department within Imagineering dedicated exclusively to putting together Star Wars-based attractions. You know, it's very unusual. I know this has been true for Pixar for a while, that they've been heavily involved in building attractions and things like that. But now we have a Star Wars fella, and Scott Trowbridge has been in Imagineering for a few years. I believe it was 2007, but he's really more like well-known in the community for some of the stuff he did at Islands of Adventure. He was the lead designer of the Spider-Man ride, which is considered by many to be one of the best theme park attractions, you know, if not in Florida, in the world. But he was also involved in some other rides, such as the Simpsons and the Mummy ride, which both are very well thought of and both are, you know, very well themed too. If you see them, they do all those rides do a good job of incorporating the theme and sort of telling a story, which I think this is good news for Star Wars fans and for Disney fans, that this particular gentleman is going to be in charge of potentially any Star Wars land.
How long have they owned the Star Wars property now?
About 2 years, right?
Can you believe how long it's taken them to even do this? I mean, it blows my mind. You know, when you think about how Walt designed and built Disneyland inside of a couple of years.
Right.
You know, you haven't even appointed somebody to start designing these things. You own maybe the biggest sci-fi property in the history of Hollywood. You spent a blooming fortune on it. And it takes you a couple of years to even start planning processes?
I don't take it to mean that this is the first, that like they're just now starting to develop stuff.
I mean,
when they were at D23, they have already announced that they were, you know, working on stuff. And I mean, they didn't show you anything, but they were basically telling you Star Wars was coming to. And they've said in the past that they were working on attractions for Star Wars. I think what they're doing now is, you know, they've basically said, you know, this is going to be really big. So we need a whole department now for Star Wars. I mean, you hear people, I heard, and I'm not going to mention the podcast, but I heard on another podcast that they talked about, you know, maybe what we're talking about is a fifth gate in Florida dedicated solely to Star Wars. There's just no chance of that. Right. I mean, it's just ludicrous to even think that.
Right.
Especially when you're sitting at Disney Hollywood Studios, which desperately needs help. You could, you know, bulldoze half that park and make that Star Wars and be perfect. But that's definitely coming. I mean, they're going to be building that, and you know they're really high tech, you know, really gearing it. Now, of course, on the other hand, you know, they announced Avatar, and it was not for a couple of years before they actually saw concept art. But you know,
yeah, that's amazing. So, is that it for the world news?
That is indeed it,
Mike. I can't believe that you went that whole time without mentioning the 25th anniversary of Disney's Hollywood MGM Studios.
I've been putting on Instagram all day pictures of Hollywood Studios and making snarky comments but saying happy birthday at the same time.
Fabulous. I love it.
My particular favorite, oh, yeah. And I'm proud of this, was I put a picture of the model from Tokyo Disney Sea from One Man's Dream, and I made a comment that it's funny that the best attraction at Disney's Hollywood Studios is an attraction geared to show you how all the other Disney parks are better than the one you're in.
Well,
sorry.
Happy birthday, Hollywood Studios. Let's hope the next 25 is better than the last.
last 10.
Yeah, we will take a short break and come back in just a second on Radio Harambe. Stick with us. Jennifer Green of Destinations in Florida is the official travel partner of Radio Harambe and JomboEveryone.com. Jen can do everything you need done in order to book your next Walt Disney World vacation and have the time of your life. She is an expert in everything Disney and will remove all the stress of booking your trip. And she is as committed to conservation as we are. So every vacation you book, or even every quote you request, means Jen and Destinations in Florida will make a donation to the Jumbo Everyone conservation effort. You can contact Jen directly by emailing her at jennifer.g@destinationsinflorida.com or by calling her directly at 443-424-0181. You can also head over to jumboeveryone.com and click the Destinations in Florida icon to get your vacation started. Seriously, what can be better than booking a Disney World vacation while helping to save wildlife? Welcome back to Radio Harambe. It is time for our feature section of the show. And we are once again answering a listener question. We said we had a couple of questions that you guys had sent in, what we wanted to dedicate some more time to than just a quick answer. Melissa, who came to us through our blog, said, I would like to hear an in-depth review of Yak and Yeti. They always end up eating at the Tusker House. Convince us to try something different. Well, okay. For those of you, so we'll give it a shot. So those of you who don't know, the Yak and Yeti is in the Asia section over by on just as you enter Asia from the road from Africa. It opened up in November of 2007. It's Animal Kingdom's table service. They say it's the second table service if you count the Rainforest Cafe, which is not actually in the park. So it really is the first sit-down table service to come into Disney's Animal Kingdom. It's Asian inspired. I guess you'd call it sort of Asian fusion, reasonably priced. The thing that sticks out to me about it, Mike, more than anything else is that it's beautiful. I mean, it has absolutely some gorgeous artwork in and around it. And a lot of that has to do with the backstory of which we will throw to you.
Okay. Very good. The Yak and Yeti actually, the backstory is that it was not always a, restaurant. It was at one point in time the a home for a merchant named Arjun, which is how I believe you pronounce it, and he was basically a very well-to-do and well-traveled merchant. But when he hit hard times, he then turned his home into both a restaurant and a hotel. Obviously, it's not really a hotel where people can actually stay, but part of the theming is the hotel aspect of it. And, he's basically turned his, over-decorated home. And all of those items that you just referenced are items that he, sort of procured over his many travels as a merchant. Now, the original structure itself is that bluish stone structure. And that allegedly is supposed to date back to the early 1920s when Anandapur was a British colony. And for those of you who may recall our podcast about the Maharaja Jungle Trek, we referenced how there is, British language in some of the, the signs and stuff for the Maharaja Jungle Trek, referencing the British rule of Anandapur. Well, that's true here too, and that's kind of a reference to it. And the rest of the building is just sort of add-ons that this merchant made to his house. That's why it looks kind of, all these different styles and things like that. He's added sort of a marble pavilion that you can sit outside and, some wooden structures elsewhere. The inside, when you first walk in, you'll see the sort of the lobby and the bar. And that is sort of a meeting place, the bar is anyway, for people who are, traveling off to either the Royal Anandapur Forest, which is, of course, the Maharaja Jungle Trek, or farther away to the mountains in the Expedition Everest. All the different rooms of the house have been converted, at least in the first two floors, to dining. And they are littered with all sorts of artifacts that were actually legitimately found in Southeast Asia and India as people from Landry's Restaurant. And that's the owners of this particular restaurant, and it's the same people who own T-Rex and all those,
right.
As well as Disney Imagineers, went out in the field and purchased actual artifacts. Some of them, you know, pottery and statues and all things like that. And you also see that they have this reference to Arjun, the merchant, being a big fan of Bollywood. And you'll see all sorts of posters from movies from Bollywood located throughout the restaurant and hotel. And as I said, you will not see, obviously, any rooms to rent or anything like that. But you'll see references to places where only hotel guests are allowed and stuff like that. And also, you know, you'll see a statue for Ganesha, which is how we believe you pronounce it. And that is the Hindu deity dedicated to removing obstacles. And that's sort of the, you know, the Arjun's, you know, I guess, patron deity. And, you know, you would think that somebody who removes obstacles would be important for a merchant. So that is the backstory of the Yak and Yeti.
And just because I always like to tell the historical side of it beyond the Disney thing, if one would ever put in the phrase Yak and Yeti, this is certainly not the only business with that name. You find pubs and things all over the world named Yak and Yeti. But the most famous is a hotel built on the grounds of a, you know, century-old palace in Kathmandu, Nepal. And they converted this old palace in the grounds into a hotel. And it's a 5-star hotel, an absolutely gorgeous building, incredibly beautiful building. And it's one of the most famous hotels in that area of the world. And that's where the phrase Yak and Yeti comes from. I assume it comes from the hotel because the backstory sounds an awful lot like the hotel's backstory. So, Mike, our brief for today, our orders for today are to convince her to try this particular restaurant over her tried and true Tusker House. So let's discuss first, before we say that, the menu.
Okay.
Mike talked a little bit about the interior. I mentioned a bit of it as well. It is absolutely beautiful. I would actually say, interior-wise, it's at least as nice as Tusker House, if not even more ornate. Certainly.
Oh, it's better.
Yeah, certainly much more, you know, much more design and thought gone into the detail. There's also some rooms, especially in the upstairs, if you ever get a chance, where you can go upstairs in some smaller kind of side rooms where the windows actually overlook Anandapur and overlook the street in front of you. And I, from what I understand, you can actually get a pretty good view of the parade from there. But that's
a very good view.
Yeah, but that's set to close soon, so let's not let's not make that too big of a thing.
I knew several people who purposely. I knew several people who would purposely make reservations for about 3 o'clock in the afternoon and request an upstairs and try to get a window seat so they can watch the parade while they eat.
Yeah,
so that is true.
A sky view of a parade is something you don't get very often in Disney.
Right.
They call the menu itself kind of fusion. It's not really fusion, Mike. I mean, it is in some way, but it's very Chinese.
Very, yeah, very Chinese and Thai a little bit too.
Yeah, touch of Thai. I mean, it has its big things are things like, they have egg rolls, dim sum. They have tempura shrimp. They have noodle bowls, lo mein, you know, stir fried beef and broccoli, sweet and sour chicken, I think, is on there. Let me look it up here. Bourbon chicken, wonton soup, mandarin's chicken salad. I mean, we could keep going here, and there's just one Chinese thing after another.
Yeah, it's very P.F. Chang's.
Okay.
I don't know if you're, you know, the menu itself is very kind of in that vein, I think. The one thing I would say about it is compared to some of the other Landry's restaurants on property, it is by far the best of those.
And when you say best, you mean food quality-wise?
Food quality-wise.
Okay.
I could eat here. I like Yak and Yeti quite a bit. I think it's a good restaurant. It's way better than the Rainforest Cafe out front. And it's different than a Tusker House. It's sit-down as opposed to buffet. And it's obviously very different types of food. If you like Chinese food, you will like this. it's pretty good. But there are even some things on the menu that are not really Chinese that are quite good. And the one that comes immediately to my mind is the Kobe beef burger.
Right.
It's obviously not, it's not real Kobe beef. It's either American, Australian kind of Kobe beef, but it is quite good. And they have this kind of scallion or Asian slaw on it. And it's, you know, they have put soy sauce on it and shoestring fries and stuff. It is really actually quite good. One of the better burgers you will find on property, which, you know, is not typical for a Chinese restaurant to have a good burger.
Right.
And some of the other things I like, and as one of the things I really like is the lettuce cups for two, which is an appetizer, but it's quite a bit. And one of the things I often do here is get the pot stickers and the lettuce cups for two, and that's all I will eat.
Right.
It's really good. The maple tamarind sauce that they have with the lettuce cups is like a minced up chicken breast and some veggies. And, you know, you get this, obviously, lettuce cups, and you eat it with the lettuce. It's really actually quite good.
I'm a big fan of the pot stickers. I think the pot stickers are terrific. Most of the stuff that I've ever had there is pretty much off-the-shelf Chinese, just better than your average kind of, you know, corner Chinese food takeout store.
Right.
So you get a much better quality of the chicken, much better quality of the pork. It feels more handmade. I'm a big fan of the lo mein noodles. I think they do a really good job on those. And the sweet and sour chicken is also very good as well. I know when I was there, I was with somebody who had the bourbon chicken who absolutely died for it. Thought it was terrific. So, you know, and Mike mentions the burger as well. I also am a fan of the drink menu.
I was going to get that. I wasn't sure how quickly you wanted to get to that.
I am a big fan of the drink menu. I think they do some sort of interesting things. They have a nice kind of variety of... I mean, first of all, they have a full-service bar, so you can get whatever you want there, drink menu-wise. But they also have some specialties. The one that they're kind of known the most for is the Yak Attack, which is essentially a mango daiquiri with a little berry thrown in. And I'm a fan of a mango daiquiri. I enjoy myself a good mango daiquiri. And I've heard other people talk about the Everest Avalanche as being a fan of that as well.
I've never had that one. The Yak Attack I've had a few times. And actually, you know, for people who maybe would like to try the Everest Avalanche, go right ahead, because you can actually get the Yak Attack outside later on if you like, and it's, they do serve it on the street outside as well. It's awfully sweet, the Yak Attack, but it is quite good.
Well, all daiquiris are sweet.
Yeah, I mean, but this one particularly is sweet.
Yeah, it has a candy feel to it, definitely.
Yeah. And the let's talk about the bar for a second. It's actually, it's one of two full service bars in the park, right? There's that one, and then the Dawa.
Yep.
It's actually a nice bar.
It's a very nice bar.
If you're looking for a place, and as we get closer to the, as we talked about before, the park being open late, you know, this wouldn't be a bad place to, you know, sit down, relax, and have a drink, and take some time. It's beautiful. It's a little small. It's not a big bar by any means.
No. There's only maybe a half a dozen chairs, maybe 6 to 10 chairs somewhere in there.
Yeah, but it is beautiful inside, and there's a lot of theming going on. A lot of the artifacts that we talked about before. There's some references to traveling parties leaving messages for their comrades and the kind of stuff. So it's a fun place to have a drink. They have some unique drinks like we just talked about. Keep that in mind as well, that, you know, even if you're not looking for food, it's not a bad place to stop for a half hour and have a nice drink.
A couple of other drinks just worth mentioning. I've also had the Shanghai Express, which is a very tropical fruity kind of drink. It's got, it's a rum-based tropical fruity drink. But the one that you see quite a bit of, because it looks so interesting, is the blue one, which I think is called the Banzai Blast. It looks very blue because it, you know, and a lot of people see it and they kind of, you know, people wonder what that is. And also, just to piggyback on what you were saying about the bar, I have traveled to Disney a couple times in situations where I was solo, going through the parks at least solo. And I will say that the bar at the Animal Kingdom is at the Yak and Yeti is without question my absolute favorite place to have a meal when traveling solo.
Really? Why is that?
Because the bartenders there, I mean, it is an actual sit-down bar in a park that right. is also a full-service restaurant, of which there are very few of them, where you can actually sit at a bar, at a bar stool, at a bar, in the park. I mean, can you name me another one?
Tune In Lounge at in Hollywood Studios.
Right.
Is there how about Rosencrown at Epcot?
Can't sit at it. And the menu is limited.
They don't have the full menu there?
Nope.
Oh. Hmm. I know there's a couple of resort, you know, restaurants like Gico, Flying Fish or whatever.
Again, all the resorts have something like that, but this is one of the few that actually has a bar you can sit and order a full menu at and just walk up to. And the stools are terrific. The bartenders are always really good. They're basically service bartenders, so when you sit there, the service you get is fantastic from them, because they only have, like I said, very limited amount of people that they work with. So there's only maybe 6 or 8 people that you ever deal with them.
Mm-hmm.
So the service is always fantastic. You always strike up conversations. It's that kind of bar. There's a lot of people moving around there. It is far and away my favorite place to go and eat if I am ever on on a solo trip.
Tutto Gusto? I know you can order the entire menu of Tutto Italia from Tutto Gusto.
Mike, are there bar stools at Tutto Gusto?
I'm trying to remember. When I ate in there, I was sitting at a table. You know, it was like a couple of couches around a little table. It wasn't really like a table, but was there? I think there was. Isn't there a bar there? I don't know. Maybe there isn't.
I mean, there may be, but I remember just like you did, where the bar, I think, is walk up. I don't think there are bar stools. I think there's just tables.
So it might be just this place in the Tune In Lounge.
Just this place in the Tune In Lounge. So, I mean, for somebody who enjoys a good bar, there really isn't a bar anywhere else on property besides the Tune In Lounge and this, a proper bar where you get to go and sit at a bar stool. So I like it. And so you couple the fact that the food is good. Along with that, if you're there by yourself, it's a great place to kind of sit and just hang by yourself and talk to the bartenders. And, you know, yeah, it's much more fun than sitting at a table by yourself, you know, staring into space.
Yeah.
You know, so that's mine. I mean, so let's talk, Mike, about convincing her to go there instead of the Tusker House.
One other thing, though, before we walk the menu and do that, let's talk about desserts real quick.
Right.
And maybe this goes to that. But the Yak and Yeti, I mean, there's a couple of things on there like cheesecake and sorbets and stuff. But the Yak and Yeti is famous, sort of, for its fried wonton dessert.
Yes.
Which is a skewer of fresh pineapple and cream cheese wontons with vanilla ice cream and a sort of a honey drizzle on it.
Yep.
To be honest, I have never had it.
Every
time I've gone to Yak and Yeti, I eat too much to ever get dessert.
Yeah.
So, and maybe that tells you you should try this place, because I always fill up before dessert. I know a lot of people who really dig the fried wonton. So I just wanted to mention that before we move on.
I enjoyed the mango pie, but I'm a mango. I'm a sucker for mango.
I never had that. That was good?
Yep, it was very good. And I believe my wife had the sorbet, which also had a mango in there.
There is a mango sorbet, correct.
Yep. And the desserts are good, but I also have not had the fried wontons. But now you have thrown down the gauntlet, so I will have it the next time I'm there.
I got to try it one of these days. Yeah. I do have to try it.
Yeah. So let's convince her to try it other than the Tusker House. First of all, my thought is I would eat at the Yak and Yeti over the Tusker House every day and twice on Sunday. I mean, I just think it's a much better place. I'm not a buffet fan.
Okay.
So that's the first issue. I don't like when I go to a restaurant and pay a fortune worth of money, is it too much to ask somebody to bring me the food? You know, so that's kind of the way I feel about it.
You can
also
eat at a buffet.
I'm sorry?
You can eat a lot more at a buffet.
Which is not always a good thing.
No, it's not always a good thing. Usually the quality of food is a little bit...
That's exactly right.
However, I will say Tuscarawas, for quality, Tuscarawas isn't bad at all.
No, I don't mean to say anything bad about Tusker House. I think it's perfectly fine. I just, if somebody said to me, which one do you want to go to, and I hadn't been to the other to one before in my trip, I'm going to go to Yak and Yeti. I just think the food is better. I think the food is better. The atmosphere is way better. You know,
The atmosphere is, I would say this about the Yak and Yeti. The decor, I'd give it an A.
Oh, yeah.
The bar, I would give that an A.
Absolutely.
The food, I would probably give a B. I would rate it, overall, probably. I mean, it's not the greatest in the world. It's not my favorite restaurant.
No, not at all.
But it is better than, I think it's better than any of the sit down restaurants at Hollywood Studios, for example. I would take the food here over Sci-Fi or Primetime Cafe or Mama Frickin' Melrose any day of the week.
It's not called Mom Frickin' Melrose.
Well, it should be.
You take it over the Brown Derby, though?
I wasn't counting the kind of,
high-end
meals. Okay. I'm leave those out for a minute.
I take it over the Brown Derby. I don't like the Brown Derby, but that's just...
I actually like the Brown Derby. I think it's quite good, but it's very expensive. Yep. So, I mean, if you're going to take price into account, then maybe not. But...
Yep.
It's better than any of the sit-down restaurants, I think, that at Magic Kingdom, for sure. I mean, it's better, although I've never done Be Our Guest, but it is way better than Tony's Town Square or Crystal Palace or that horrible Liberty Tree Tavern. and it's better than many of them. I mean, it's better than the Chinese restaurant in Epcot, I'll tell you that.
That's not even comparable.
It's better than Nine Dragons.
It's not even comparable. I mean, when you take into account price, quality of food, I mean, Nine Dragons. The food you get at Nine Dragons is akin to what you get at your corner Chinese food store.
Right, and this is a step up.
This is not right.
It's like a step up. I mean, I talked about P.F. Chang's before, which is kind of that chain, but sit down. It's like a Chili's, but for Chinese food.
Right.
And this is kind of like that, but maybe like a little step up from that. Not a big step, but maybe a little bit better than that. I mean, it is sort of a chain kind of food quality to it. But that's better than your corner Chinese restaurant. It's not, it's not crazy expensive by any means. But, so I give it a B in terms of food quality. So wrap that all together, the unique drinks, the bar, the atmosphere, and pretty good food. It's a good place to go and have a meal.
Inside of a theme park, it is a good place to go and have a meal. Now, Mike, you said before you'd give the food quality a B.
I think so.
So what would you give the food quality at the Tusker House?
I like the Tusker House. I would put that probably around a... maybe a B, B minus. I like the Tusker House more than you do.
So you'd say this is comparable to the Tusker House in food quality?
I would say, they're both pretty good restaurants. Not great. Not in terms of food quality, again. The decor here is a little bit better than the Tusker House, and it's a sit-down restaurant as opposed to getting, all-you-can-eat buffet. I mean, that's really what it boils down to. What are you into? Are you into shoving food down your face, until... the end of time, and meeting characters, which is another thing about Tusker House for lunch anyway. Or do you want to have a sit down meal? They bring you food, you have a nice drink, all that kind of stuff. I mean, it really kind of goes to, what you're looking for. I would absolutely try Yak and Yeti. If you've never tried it, try it.
I know a lot of people are turned off by the restaurant being owned by somebody outside of Disney. By a company who does produce chain restaurants and things like that.
Yeah.
Folks, that's the reality of the world now. I mean, that's just what we have. And many of the restaurants on Disney property are owned by outside companies now. I mean, that's just the way it's going.
Right.
So this is another one in that trend. And however disappointed you may be by that, that's just the way it is. I would agree with Mike entirely. The food quality is like a higher end chain restaurant.
Right.
It's not Applebee's.
No, it's way better. Than that.
It's better than that. But but it does have that. It doesn't have that handmade quality. that you would get in a, you know, in a local corner restaurant.
Right. I mean, yeah. I mean, it's obviously produced for the, I mean, you're in a theme park, so every right. restaurant's going to be there for, you know, right. produced for the masses. But you know, it doesn't quite have the feel. I mean, it feels a little bit different than sitting down at a Chili's, you know, it doesn't,
yes.
some of the food quality is kind of along those lines, you know, but that's fine, you know, but it does just doesn't feel like it. It
right.
feels like you're in a unique place.
So go, Melissa.
Yeah, give it a shot.
Give it a shot. You can't. There's nothing about the Tusker House that would make me say, "Oh boy, you can't give that up for this." There's just nothing about that. I mean, I right. Mike likes the Tusker House more than I do. I like it. You know, I don't like the quality of buffet foods, and I certainly don't want characters leaning over my meal while I'm trying to eat. But that's just me. I'm obviously unique when it comes to that.
No, I don't think that's true.
As we've discussed in a previous show.
I think buffets, generally, the food quality is not as good, obviously, as a sit-down restaurant. But in terms of the realm of Disney World buffets, I think Tusker House is a notch above, you know, Hollywood and Vine, Crystal Palace, all of those. I think Tusker House is better than all those. There's only one or two that I think are better than the Tusker House, Boma being one of them. But again, I'd rather, and almost all the time, I'd rather go to a sit-down restaurant such as Yak and Yeti.
Yeah. Yep. There you have it, Melissa. Go see the Yak and Yeti. thank you once again, folks, for listening to Radio Harambe. And thanks to Melissa for sending in her question.
Yes, absolutely.
Yep. We still have a couple more to go yet, so stay tuned for the rest of these questions if you haven't had yours read. Please visit our website, johnboeveryone.com. As I mentioned before, while you're there, we ask you to visit our conservation page. And also, when you get to the front page of our blog, click on the bracelet photo on the top right corner. Buy one of our handmade Giambo bracelets, I'm calling them. I don't know what she calls them, but that's what I like.
Sounds good.
Yeah, we donated the proceeds to our conservation partners. You can actually pick what conservation organization you want your funds donated to. Check out our store at Zazzle.com/JohnBoEveryone. There we have some great design stuff, lots of great animal stuff, and also the famed Not a Half Day Park t-shirts. Certainly my favorite. You can find us on Twitter. Mike Safari Mike is at JohnBoEveryone. I am at Radio Harambe. We're also on Facebook. We got some YouTube videos up, of which we have tons more to go. I just have not gotten around to adding some of those. Mike is active on the Instagram and whatever that Pinterest thing is.
Yep.
You can find those links at JohnBoEveryone.com. We ask that you subscribe to the show on iTunes. Certainly rate us and leave us a review there as well. Apparently that helps to get the word out along the iTunes highway, so to speak. You can also listen to us on Stitcher and Podbean. Mike, anything else we want to mention before we go?
I don't think so.
All right. So for Safari Mike, I'm Dave McBride. Kwaharini, go well. And thank you once again for listening to Radio Harambe. Kwaku walufamela ko na kumbu